What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now is the Jonah Dillon. That's what he is on X. But it is Jonah Dillon. He covers the Tigers and the Grizzlies for the Commercial Appeal. Jonah, how's it going, man? Good to talk with you.
Doing well. It's been a busy last week. I mean, this time last week I was still in Charlotte trying to figure out all the American Media Day stuff, and now it feels like a decade ago. There's been a lot of stuff in the last week or so. It never ends.
How were the American Media Days with the drama, with the UTSA drama coinciding?
Yeah, there's a lot of drama. It was our first chance to ask, you know, coaches and Tim Pernetti about the Big 12 stuff with Memphis, right? Obviously, that's a huge deal with the conference. And just general stuff. I mean, the fact that Jake Retzlaff's commitment to Tulane was so far buried beneath all this other stuff, I thought was crazy, because I was thinking a couple of days earlier that was going to be the big story. You know, like talking to people kind of about the best teams in the conference and what do you think is going to be the top team and stuff like that. By the time we got there to Friday, it was, there were a lot of things going on. So it was cool to see everyone and kind of kick off football and start thinking about where this conference is. Obviously, since they didn't do the media poll, kind of just talking to people about, okay, what do you think about this team? What do you know about this guy? A lot of new coaches. It was good to be able to, you know, kind of kick it off, and then camp obviously started, and now we're off and running.
So with no media poll, what was the general consensus you got about the University of Memphis going into this year from other media members?
Yeah, I think most people kind of thinking, okay, Memphis is in that tier at the top, but the sense that I got, and to be honest, what I thought going in, especially like I said, with the Jake Retzlaff commitment, Tulane feels like it's probably in a little bit of a tier of its own, like a 1A, and then you've got 1B, look at Memphis, UTSA, and Navy. Those are the teams that I think people were talking about the most. Obviously, Navy like kind of stuck up on people a lot last year. That's not going to happen this year. Army, obviously the defending champions, but they lost their quarterback who was, you know, a Heisman contender and really the engine of everything they did. And so I think UTSA is a team people are pretty high on. I know obviously we spent most of the time talking about UTSA for reasons not about if they're going to be good this year. But look, again, Owen McCown, someone that we've talked about. Owen McCown, he played really good football at the end of last season, regardless of why you think that is. And so I think UTSA, if they can improve defensively, that's a team that legitimately has a case to be in that American title game when we get to December.
To be fair to Owen McCown, he played well even without signs from other people, at least to my knowledge at this moment. You know, just the ones Taj Riel sent him for that Memphis game. Now, the Jake Retzlaff thing, I know it sort of happened quickly. He committed, he signed, he's on campus. I was checking out. I was very curious when Tulane started training camp if he was going to run out there with the ones. It seems that he has. Like, how concerning is it, though, that he has not had any run-up to the season? I mean, this is really, really quick when it comes to a turnaround. I think everybody's just sort of assuming he's going to be who he was at BYU, but you have to be entrenched in the playbook. You have to understand your surroundings, and I don't think he's had an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a fair concern. I think the thing with Tulane was a lot of these teams, and obviously we'll get to it with Memphis, where you talk about a quarterback competition, but really, you know, if you're following it, you have a pretty good idea of who the guy is going to be, and certainly the coaches have an idea. It really sounds like with Tulane, even before Jake Retzlaff came in, obviously they had kind of turmoil in the spring. They really were going into this training camp with an open quarterback competition. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's one of the reasons why he was interested in going there, is because there was a legitimate shot for him to be the starter. But I think because of that and the whole team kind of coming back and saying, okay, we don't know who our quarterback is going to be. Now somebody comes in who's probably more talented than anybody else that we have in the room. And yes, he's got to get up to speed on the playbook and his teammates and stuff like that. But again, you know, it's not like he was just sitting there doing nothing. He was, up until very recently, with BYU in the spring, expecting to be their quarterback, training, doing all that stuff. And so it's not like there's going to be a big run-up, I think, in terms of like getting in shape or stuff like that. And so, yeah, I think it's a fair question. Even I talked to John Sumrall when we were in Charlotte, and he said, I honestly don't know if he's going to be ready for week one. And so that would be significant. They've got a really, really tough non-conference schedule, and it starts really quickly. And so if he's not ready, even if they want him to be their guy, those first couple of weeks are going to be a little bit dicey. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow.
No doubt. Now, at Memphis, you want to call it a QB battle all you want, but they did send Brendan Lewis, the Nevada transfer, to American Media Days. I think that's pretty telling in itself. But it seems like the staff is still trying to keep that like quarterback battle, the semblance of it alive, just for competition's sake. How do you view the quarterback position at the University of Memphis? Is it sort of open and shut? You think Brendan Lewis is going to be that guy?
Yeah, I would say obviously it's not 100%. If it was 100%, they would say that he's a starter. I think there's a chance. And as John Sumrall pointed out many times last week, this time last year, Darren Mensah was the third string quarterback for Tulane, right, going to camp. And everybody kind of had an idea of how that was going to go. I think with Brendan Lewis, it's just really hard for, and we knew this even in the spring, it was always going to be really hard for anybody to overcome the experience gap, because it's so significant. You talk about 35 games as a college starter versus everybody else, zero games, one snap in the entire rest of the quarterback room. And so he went into camp into the spring with a huge advantage in that sense. And it sounds like it's not like he did anything to lose that, right? That was kind of the story was, are they going to be able to close the gap, any of those other guys, or is he going to do anything that makes them think, okay, maybe this isn't the guy? And it just doesn't sound like that happened. And like you said, the fact that they wanted to bring him to Media Days as a representative for this team kind of says, okay, leadership-wise, this is the guy we want. And if that's the guy you want as your leader, he's probably going to be your starting quarterback.
Yep. Now let's grab an opinion from you. What do you think of Brendan Lewis and his skill set? And also on top of that, I guess this is a two-part question. How much do you think this offense is going to have to change? Like, how much does Tim Kramsey sort of pivot based on what he did the last few years here with Seth Hennigan? Because it seems like the skill sets are, you know, I think Brendan can throw the ball from the pocket. He showed that a little bit at Nevada, showed that a little bit at Colorado. But he's not Seth Hennigan in that regard. Like, how much do you think this offense is going to have to change?
I think a lot. I don't know how much it has to, but I think it's going to change a lot, because you look at Brendan Lewis's skill set and it's really about the run game, right? Everyone you talk to about him, dual threat. And so it's about his ability to, not necessarily just to do design runs, but to kind of be out moving outside the pocket, scrambling, and then RPO games, stuff like that, a lot more. And I think we're going to see that. And also, I think when you look at this offense as a whole, I think it's built around speed more than it has been in the past couple of years. And really, it's going to be built around the running backs. I think that's the big thing, is they look at that running back room as potentially really the engine of this offense in a way that it was not the past couple of years. They've had really good running backs. It's not about necessarily the talent. It's just about the way the offense is kind of made up. Obviously, there are questions at receiver. Now, the one thing that they would probably tell you they have at receiver is speed. And yep. So I think that's kind of the name of the game, is going to be speed. And that means a lot of different stuff. Even in the spring game, we saw a lot of like side-to-side movement, option stuff, pop passes, receivers getting jet sweeps, stuff like that. So I think you're going to see stuff that maybe has been in the playbook the last couple of years but has not been utilized as much. I think it's going to be a lot more of that going into this season.
Yeah, now Sutton Smith is a guy who got the full green light. He was out all last year after tearing his ACL. What was it, in the first series last year?
Yeah, first quarter.
I mean, just
yeah.
absolutely ridiculous. How quickly that happened last year, but he's done the ACL rehab. It still feels like there's high expectations there, but like, should there be? coming off of an ACL, I know that ACL surgery and rehab is not how it once was. It could have been, you know, back in the day, 20 years ago, this was career ending. It's not that way anymore. How high should those expectations be for Sutton Smith coming off of a year completely missed?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to caveat it with the injury stuff, right? Can he stay healthy? And he's not the biggest running back, right? So that's always a concern. But the expectations, the ceiling is still as high as really anybody on this team. And that's why you hear so many people constantly talking about Sutton Smith and what he can do. Just go look at his highlight reel, right? The play against Iowa State in the Liberty Bowl a couple years ago, you know, just like one of the best, you think about the past couple years, and obviously Greg DeWosier and Juke against Tulane is up there. And just in terms of where the running backs are now, but Sutton Smith has that skill set where you look at what he did on a small sample size and you say, okay, if he could do that consistently, you're talking about a legitimate candidate to be a superstar. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to get there. But in terms of like highest possible ceilings for players, he's got to be as high as anybody on this team and really in this conference. Like it would be easy to see the scenario where he stays healthy and he does those things on a more consistent basis. And then you're talking about, wow, they have this guy Sutton Smith in Memphis. He's the next, you know, breakout running back. I think, like you said, you still got to think about it in the sense of, yes, he's coming off an ACL injury. It's probably a positive for him that it happened at that point in the season, because if it happened in December, then we would have to have a much different conversation about, okay, is he still working his way back? You know, the idea and what we've heard from everyone is like, he's ready to go. There's not going to be limitations when the season starts. And so that's the biggest chance for Memphis to suddenly the offense changes because they have this guy who they haven't really had operating at his highest possible level the past couple of years for various reasons. Either he was kind of buried on the depth chart or obviously battling injuries.
Yeah, now something I have had a question about is like how they're going to handle the running back room, because they have a lot of talent in there. Greg DeRozier, Sutton Smith, they brought in a couple through the transfer portal. So they had, and Makari Botiford was a freshman last year and he showed some promise. So there's a lot of guys in that running back room that can make some things happen. Do you expect this to be by committee, running back by committee? Yeah. Or do you think they have that stalwart back? Because that's something they've also sort of found a way to you know, take advantage of. Mario Anderson Jr. was that guy.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a committee, and I think this is the one where when the depth chart comes out and we see the or,
there's going to be all ors. It's just going to be big or.
Sometimes you see the or and you need to read into it. Why is this guy the or? Why is he not the starter? When you get the running back depth chart and it says Sutton Smith or Greg DeWosier, I don't think we need to read into it, because I think both these guys are going to play a lot. And I understand why people are saying, well, who's the number one? Who's the number two? You look at like the way college offenses operate, and like you can play two running backs, and not to compare these guys, obviously, but think about Ohio State last year, right? You're not talking about who was the number one, who was the number two. There's enough in there for both those guys to be star players. And there's a lot of college offenses that operate that way. And I think, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier about the offense, I think that this offense is going to operate this year in a way where you can legitimately have two running backs operating as essentially starters. And part of that is going to be because I think they can play together. I think they can line up out of the backfield. I think you might see them in the slot. And I think you're going to see them catching passes and stuff. And so, and again, both of them in the return game, stuff like that. So I think when we see the or on the depth chart, those guys basically, and you might even hear the coach speak, they're both starters. In this case, it might actually be true. Not always, but in this case, I'm willing to kind of go there because I think that's how it's going to end up going.
Yeah, and you can get really dynamic with those two running back sets. I remember back, you know, in the 2019 year, the Cotton Bowl year, you obviously different level of talent, and we'll see what these guys can do. But it would be Kenny Gainwell, Antonio Gibson out there. There was a year before that in 2018 where you had 2,000-yard rushers and Daryl Henderson Jr. and Patrick Taylor Jr. So definitely, like, we have some runway and some understanding of how that could potentially work at the University of Memphis. Now, one question we've had going into the season with all of the guys moving on, graduating, and otherwise is the wide receiver room, the pass catcher room. You lose Anthony Lanfer, you lose Rock Taylor, you lose Kobe Drake, you lose Demir Blankensee. So you have to completely reload. And looked like Ryan called it a grab bag, right? He called it a grab bag of wide receivers. And you brought up the speed already, but they just added another to their grab bag pretty late. Cortez Braham from Nevada. He's played with Brendan Lewis, caught a touchdown from Brendan Lewis last year. What can you tell me about him? I know you got to speak with him.
Yeah, I mean, instantly, the second that he said he's committed, he becomes their most proven receiver, which is crazy because it's August. I mean, I guess this was July, right? So it was the last day of July, but this is something that, you know, like you said, Ryan Silverfield talks about it. There's really nobody in that room who's proven it at the FBS level. Jerkhard Caldwell is a transfer from North Carolina A&T. some production at the FCS level, and then you're looking at either guys who have been in this program for a couple years or even one who they're excited about, or guys who are transfers, and mostly a situation where the guys who are transfers were big-time recruits, went somewhere else, didn't play a lot or battled injuries, and now they're at Memphis, and so the talent is there, but the production isn't. Cortez Braham, the production was there to an extent that obviously nobody else has, and then obviously the connection with Brendan Lewis, so that's big. I mean, if he's able to come in here, and look, when I talked to him yesterday, he didn't even know when he was going to get here or anything.
Yeah, that's
like
what
that.
I was going to ask. Like, we hit the ground running here. Does he get into camp tomorrow? How does that work?
Yeah, that's the thing. So if he's able to get here, and the thing with Cortez Braham, and again, it's super complicated, so we don't have to go through all the details, but with the eligibility stuff, he's got to make sure he's cleared and all this stuff is good to go, because technically there's still an appeal going on. He should be eligible to play from what I've been told and what he said. But this stuff is really complicated. And so once he gets here, you know, if he gets here and he has enough time to learn the playbook and get up to speed, you could easily say this guy can be the number one receiver for this team. Like, and based on the production and the talent and stuff, like, he probably should be. But the question, and it goes back to even what we were talking about with Jake Retzloff earlier, is like, okay, you don't have very much time to get here and get to know the playbook and stuff. Obviously, the connection with Brendan Lewis is huge. Like, that helps. Brendan Lewis was helping to recruit him here, and obviously played with him last year and knows how to build that chemistry, and they already have it. And so I don't think it's going to take him that long once he gets here. But yeah, they've got to figure that out quickly, because they need to figure out that receiver room. And if it was a grab bag a couple of days ago, you know, you added something else to the bag, which maybe you want to grab first, but there's still a lot of other stuff to go through.
Yeah. Now, when we look at the rest of the conference in football, and we talk about investment, we know Tulane and Memphis are in sort of a class all of their own. Who else is even close? Based on conversations you've had, sort of looking around the conference, who else is even close to Tulane and Memphis when it comes to investment in football, the resources being poured in?
Yeah, the only school I would consider close is South Florida, and they've been investing. And if you're following the, like, recruiting, South Florida is always up there with Memphis at the top of the conference, and in some cases is ahead of Memphis. They actually flipped a Memphis recruit in this year's recruiting class, and they're building a new stadium, spending a lot of money on it, and obviously a market where they feel like there's a lot of room for growth. And so that's a team. I think they've kind of been a sleeper the past couple of years. Obviously last year is basically a wash because their quarterback basically was out for the entire season, which is a super weird one. Alex Golesh saying every week that he was going to come back or he was day to day or something. And then he missed like 8 weeks in a row. So that was a weird situation. But if Byron Brown is healthy, I think basically one of these years, it might be this year, it might be in the future, South Florida is going to come out of where they are now, which is considered like a middle-of-the-pack team, and they're going to be one of the best teams in the conference. I think that's just going to happen one of these years. You're talking about an explosive offense, and again, the investment moving forward is there. And so that's a team that I think, you know, you see them in these rumors for other conferences and stuff, and they're investing across their athletic department, right? They're expecting to be a lot better in men's basketball with Brian Hodgson, and so we'll see what happens. But I think that's one that I would say they're the only one that, in terms of investment, feels like they're even close at this point.
No, I know every single year is different at the University of Memphis, and they turn over the roster, and there's not as much continuity as there once was, all that. They're still doing high school recruiting, though, which is nice to see, and they're getting guys to stay year over year in certain situations. But, like, if we're talking bare-bones expectations every single year for Memphis, what do you think that bar is for Ryan? Right, like, obviously hasn't been to an AAC title game, hasn't won a title. Like, what is the bare-bone expectation for this program, the way it sits right now with the resources being poured in?
I mean, that last part is key with the resources. I think that the expectation should be get to the conference title game. Now, that's you're not going to get there, but your things happen. Guys get injured. Other teams have better years, or they recruited somebody who becomes a superstar, stuff like that. And that doesn't mean that every year you should win it or whatever. But I think it's fair to say, expectation-wise, based on the resources, yeah, you should be one of the two best teams in this conference, and you should expect every year able to do that. Even in a year like this, where you're talking about rebuilding, like, the resources that Memphis has, and honestly, the recruiting ability that Ryan Sommerfeld has, because recruiting has never really been an issue for him.
Right.
I think you look at the talent on this roster, and like, you could maybe make a case for Tulane, but I think top to bottom, it's really tough to argue that this is not the most talented roster in the conference. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to consistently have the top roster in the conference, then the expectation should be that you should be one of the best teams. And so I think I think it's fair based on that to expect that. Obviously, you've got to think about the specific things every year, like I said. But yeah, bare bones expectations, I think that's where it should be.
Yeah, talking with Jonah Dillon, covers Tigers and Grizzlies for the Commercial Appeal on X at the Jonah Dillon. Now, Jonah, we have not caught up since the University of Memphis made a bid to try to get into the Big 12. Most lucrative offer in the history of college athletics for membership. Did you, I know it's a spectrum, and I know there's positives and negatives that you can take away. Did you lean more on the positive or negative side? I know it's hard to hear a no if, you know, all these old school and University of Memphis fans that have been told no by the Big 12 before, but being able to give that type of offer, there's some positivity there. So, like, on that spectrum, where did you lean, more positive or negative, for the University of Memphis with that denial, but also giving away and offering one of the most lucrative packages in college athletics history?
Yeah, I think I would shade positive because of what you just said, like the fact that they were willing to mobilize that kind of money. And I know some of it, obviously look at the offer, and some of it is like sponsorships where you're essentially like the middleman for these companies. And so that's not exactly like cold hard cash. But some of it, the fact that you're willing to not take that money, the media rights money, the fact that you are willing to, they told them they would be at full revenue share, $20.5 million a year moving forward by next year, which I would not have expected at all, right? This year, we don't, you even heard Ed Scott say he's not close to that. And then one of the things that I don't think necessarily, there's so much in this offer, in this story, but if they were going to leave the American and go to the Big 12, the implication was they would do it, they would try to do it for next year. You're going to have to pay a $25 million-ish exit fee. And the fact that they made this offer tells me that they were able to do that if this had been accepted. And that was a huge question even back in the fall when we were talking about the Pac-12 stuff. Was like, could you really mobilize that kind of money to pay in an exit fee? Because that's not, you know, sponsorship money. That's like you have to pay them the money. You have to have the money.
Sure.
And so the fact that Ed Scott was able to clearly get to a place where he could get donors to say, yeah, we'll pay this money right now. Like that's a pretty big deal, because that means that when you need to pull the trigger on something, if it comes up in the future, you're able to mobilize that kind of money. And so, yeah, when you talk about positives, the fact that they have all that, I think is a huge positive. And honestly, I thought a lot of the fans, the reaction was more positive than I would have expected when I first saw the story, right? Like at first you would have thought, oh, here we go again with the Big 12. But a lot of fans were like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, they like the aggressiveness too, right? I think that's the biggest thing to, you know, on top of just the offer in general, is I think there were some people, especially after they denied Pac-12, the Pac-12, what was that, late or early last year, you know, there was that thought, like, are they ever going to be able to get out of this conference? They're clearly efforting. Now, the Big 12's lack of interest, is that a lack of interest for now or lack of interest all time, right? Because that's a question I want to get to, because this offer seemingly, if it's out there now, the Big 12 could sort of, put that in their head and revisit this at a later date if Memphis shows a little bit more value. But did you view this as a no for now or sort of a no going forward?
I think it's a no unless there's other conference realignment movement, because it looks like the Big 12, like, and you saw it in some of Ross Dillinger's reporting, like obviously the Big 12 has said no to Memphis many times, at least four times in the last decade or so. Memphis has tried to join the Big 12, whether it's formally or not, and the conference has said no. So it doesn't feel like they're interested, even though Memphis comes back and they say, look, we have all this money now, and look, we have invested in our football program, we have invested in our stadium, we have improved our academics. The Big 12 kind of says, okay. But if there's big conference realignment moves where there's stuff happening in the Power Four, the ACC, whatever goes on with that, then you're in a situation where maybe the Big 12 in general feels like we want to add teams. And if they wanted to add a team, if any power conference wanted to add a team from the Group of Five, you would have to think Memphis was at the top of the list. So you got to be in the right place at the right time. It just doesn't feel like this was the right time. And yeah, I think Memphis is getting to the point where they're going to be in the right place, but obviously it's got to line up.
How real is the possibility of Pac-12 and football and Big East for everything else, notably basketball?
It's real. I think it's a real possibility. You have to kind of weigh that of I just think it's going to come down to finances. I think that's what matters. And being in a conference for not all the sports in the Pac-12, like, you're not going to have as big of a say, right, in terms of how the conference works long term. that could end up being the best option for Memphis if you decide that getting to a power conference is never going to happen, which I don't think they've decided that yet, right? The Big 12 said no. Some people think they would reconsider if the offer was different. The ACC, you know, who knows what their situation is. And so I don't think they've gotten to the point there. I think, look, Memphis basketball playing in the Big East would be pretty great, right? Like, the Big East basketball is legit and has history and all that stuff. And you're talking about major blue blood programs. So if they could get to a point where they could do that, I think it would work. And obviously football would feel like they're in a better situation, but it's not a perfect solution. And so I think they're going to always know that.
All right. Now, final thing I want to ask you about the American Athletic Conference heading into the football season. I think there's a group of five at the top. You Memphis, Tulane, Navy, South Florida, and I'm forgetting one right now, but I could throw them in there. Let's see, UTSA. UTSA is thought of very highly.
Anybody? First of all, you got to watch it with American Athletic Conference.
Remember, yeah, sorry, I can't get that. You know, I played in the American Athletic Conference from 2013 to 2017. It's hard for me to get out of that. You know, that terminology. But anybody outside of those five that you think made real headway this offseason that could actually sort of surprise us, a ECU or a, I don't know, you know, a Tulsa, like who else out there?
No, definitely, yeah. Tulsa would not be my answer. I think Tulsa, if you talk to people, is probably at the bottom. But I would go, I think ECU, like, they played really well at the end of last season and they really found something. And then you look at North Texas, I think would be another one, because Eric Morris has been doing some pretty crazy stuff offensively with basically a revolving door at every position the past couple of years. They've been really bad defensively, and they feel like they're going to be better this year. They brought in a lot of new guys and a new defensive coordinator. And like I said, he always seems to find a quarterback. And we've seen it, obviously, against Memphis the past couple of years. If they can put it together, that's a team. Obviously, the resources aren't necessarily there. That's a team that I think could surprise people. They can win a game against a team that's maybe better than them because of their offense and because of what Eric Morris has done. And so I would definitely have that on their radar. They don't play Memphis this year, but yeah, those are a couple that I would think about.
Yeah, and who, East Carolina, is it Caton Hauser? Caton Hauser from Michigan State stepping in. So at least they have a quarterback situation, like a decent quarterback situation, because he wasn't terrible at Michigan State.
If you've got a quarterback at the Group of Five level that you're confident in, that's a huge step
yes,
up. I mean, it's
right.
Like,
there's no doubt about it. Elsewhere in the Group of Five, though, who do you sort of put at the top of that list, right? Because it's Boise State, James Madison, teams like that. UNLV.
To me, I mean, honestly, I think that Boise State is number one. I think UNLV is probably number two. You can make a case with Tulane. For me, those are the two I would argue with for number two. I think that UNLV is going to be really interesting this year because, yes, there's a lot of turnover, but, man, you look at what they did in the transfer portal, what Dan Mullen has done in his first however many months there. There's a lot of investment going on there, and there's a lot of
They're
going to
be playing in Allegiant full-time, right? Allegiant Stadium?
Yeah. But so that's a team that, look, there's always going to be questions, but you bring in Dan Mullen to a program, again, that feels like it wants to invest right now. And I'm interested to see how they do, especially with Boise State, obviously, in their conference. I wouldn't pick them to beat Boise State, but, like, you could definitely say those are the top two teams. And then, like you said, James Madison – I don't know, some of the Sunbelt teams, they beat up on each other, so it's hard to say one's going to come out of there. Like, I would still pick Boise State, or I would pick a team from the American, the champion, to be the Group of Five playoff representative. But those are the teams. I think Boise State, people are, oh, Ashton Gentry's gone, so we don't have to think about them. No, that team brought back a lot of the players. They brought back their quarterback, Maddox Madsen, and really, like, is clearly the top team going to this season from the Group of Five.
For sure. Well, Jonah, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for hopping on. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. He is Jonah Dillon at The Jonah Dillon on X, Tigers and Grizzlies for the Commercial Appeal. We need to go ahead and grab a break, though, on that note. And when we come back, we're going to hop into the Blitz. And in the Blitz today, we need to talk about Joe Varden's story from The Athletic. Daryl Morey, the 76ers GM, gave him a comment about the bubble and the Lakers bubble title. And surprise, surprise.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom?
Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Guys, he hated on it. He called it an asterisk-laden title. But we need to discuss that when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
The Athletic did a story revisiting the 2020 COVID bubble 5 years later. In the story, 76ers GM Daryl Morey went after the Lakers' title. Had the Rockets won the title, I absolutely would have celebrated it as legitimate, knowing the immense effort and resilience required. Yet, everyone I speak to around the league privately agrees that it doesn't truly hold up as a genuine championship. Perhaps the lasting legacy of the NBA bubble is that the NBA should be proud of its leadership at both the beginning and end of the pandemic, even though the champion will forever be marked by an asterisk.
Why did he attach his name to this? Why did he put himself in the line of fire like this? I don't understand this from Daryl Morey. I want to say this. James Harden, I think, said it very, very, very well. Said it as you know, well as anybody has said it. Daryl Morey's a liar, and I think that holds up here. The obvious hypocrisy there is, if my team would have won, it would have been legitimate. But since the Lakers won, can't give it to them. They beat you in 5 games, brother. It wasn't close. And I know a lot of people hold this opinion, Connor. But when you ask players, when you hear players talk about the bubble, they say it was one of the hardest championships and hardest situations to be a part of in NBA history. It's not normal. You were stuck in there testing for COVID every day. You're at Disney. You're not around your family, right? The mental health aspect of this gets lost, I think. But I do want people to remember who the Lakers were in 2019-2020. They were the best team in the NBA. And they were the best team in the NBA pre-bubble, post-bubble, after the season. Whenever you wanted to go ahead and, you know, make your distinction, they were the best team. They were 52-19 before we shut the season down. They were first in the Western Conference. LeBron James and AD were both still full prime.
LeBron, I think, was, I mean, what was it exactly? Second in MVP voting, and Anthony Davis was sixth in MVP voting. Anthony Davis was second in Defensive Player of the Year voting.
They were both first team.
They were both first team All-NBA. Anthony Davis was first team All-Defense. Dwight Howard was on the sixth man of the year. He was in the top 10 in voting. Kyle Kuzma averaged 13 points per game. You had Rajon Rondo as a backup guard. You had a great – Alex Caruso was on that team.
KCP.
You had a great team. I don't know why people, like, lose their mind. Danny Green at the end of his career still playing well on both ends.
Avery Bradley.
I mean, it was a good team. I don't know why people act like they weren't the best team in the NBA that year, because they very clearly were. I thought that their big rotation was unbelievable. I thought that was one of the biggest reasons they disposed of the Nuggets as quickly as they did in the Western Conference Finals, right? You look at what they threw at Jokic. You had Anthony Davis to throw at him. You had JaVale McGee to throw at him. You had Dwight Howard in the sort of twilight of his career to throw at him. That team was awesome. And we lose sight of that. I think regardless of if we went into the bubble or not, if COVID never happened, they probably would have won a title anyway.
Yeah.
I'm tired of the asterisk talk. To go win a championship and beat all those teams in those series four straight, it takes talent, it takes wherewithal, and they had it that year. So I'm so sick of this. I'm amazed that Daryl Morey wanted to attach his name to this publicly. It's kind of embarrassing to me.
It's the Lakers were going to win the title that year. They were the best team. They had the best odds even before the bubble to win the NBA championship. Really, the only reason it gets talked about this way is for two reasons. One, it's the Lakers, and two, it's LeBron. Like, you could even say they're 1A, 1B. You know, two, one of the teams that has the most haters in the league for mostly good reason, and then LeBron has a lot of detractors for various reasons. I think, though, listen to the players that were there. All of the players that were there talk about how grueling the bubble was because it was pure hoops. There was nothing else you could do. You didn't have your family there. You had to test for COVID. Like you said, the mental health aspect of it was major. And the Lakers rolled through the bubble, man. They absolutely rolled. And I think that they probably would have done that if the NBA regular season was able to continue. Now, we can have the conversation about how it allowed LeBron to get some rest before a playoff run truly happened, which probably was a big benefit. But the rest of the teams also got that rest. It's not like that's why any advantage that the Lakers may have had, the other teams and the other players also had those advantages in the bubble.
No, honestly, though, like, what inherent advantage did the Lakers have in winning that title?
That's what I'm trying to say.
I just don't get it. I don't get it.
I remember when the bubble was happening, it was some of the best basketball we had ever seen. The games were incredible in the bubble. Incredible. And I really do think that the only reason people like to call it a Mickey Mouse ring, which is pretty funny, the only reason they like to call it that is because LeBron won it and the Lakers won it.
Yeah, do you think if somebody else won it that year?
If the Heat won it, we wouldn't be calling it that. We simply would not be calling it a Mickey Mouse ring. It's because LeBron won it and because the Lakers won it. Now, that being said, I think that most people that talk about basketball, that care about basketball, that pay attention to basketball, They say that tongue-in-cheek for the most part. I think that the majority of the opinion is if the players there say it was a hard championship to win, then it was a hard championship to win. If you come to me and you say that it's not a legitimate championship, I just immediately assume you don't know ball. Yeah. I don't want to talk to you anymore.
And some people will bring up the fact that there was no fans. And I think that helped, like, a Tyler Hero. Or remember TJ Warren had a 53-point game in the bubble. Like, I think it helped guys like that.
I did see that.
But LeBron James is used to playoff environments and was very used to playoff environments at that point. I don't know if that's an advantage.
Not
having a home court advantage if you're the Miami Heat in those finals. I don't think that mattered all that much.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You're telling me that LeBron would have been that the crowd would have been overwhelming for LeBron when he went into Golden State game 7 2016 and won on that court. You're telling me that LeBron James would have been overwhelmed by a crowd What are we talking about? Like an away crowd would have gotten to LeBron. It's just, oh, also, I'm sorry. It may be one of the best games in NBA history, single performance wise, happened where? In Boston, game six. So that LeBron James would have been overwhelmed by an away crowd that season. Is that really the argument that some people are trying to go with?
And I'll leave people with this. The other thing that always gets neglected with these asterisk bubble talks and the Mickey Mouse championship is the fact that the Lakers beat the hell out of everybody.
Beat the living crap out of people.
They gentlemen swept everybody in the Western Conference.
The Nuggets gave them a good fight, though.
Yes, but they won against the Heat in six games. Not a single series went to seven games. They rolled through those finals. They rolled through them.
Well, they should have won. Danny Green hit that shot.
They were 16-5 on their way to winning that title. Like it wasn't close. They were a great team. I'm tired of these conversations.
Memphis got a commitment from Nevada transfer Cortez Braham. He's 6'2", 200 pounds in 2024. He had 56 receptions for 724 yards.
And three touchdowns on top of that. And Memphis was competing against Virginia and UCLA for his services. I believe he was granted another year because of the JUCO rules, the Diego Pavia rule, if you will. So that's why he's at the University of Memphis and why he is able to play one more year. He's immediately the most experienced and most talented guy in that wide receiver room. Now, one question that I need an answer to is when he's actually going to be on campus, because this is a quick turnaround. I know he's got some familiarity with Brendan Lewis, who will likely be the starter that runs out there game one against Chattanooga. But at the same time, it's a new offense. You have to have some understanding. You know, this was necessary to me because I look at that wide receiver room and there's just not a bunch of proven talent. This at least gives you some proven talent. I will say this is a big wide receiver room. Everybody's 6'2". Brady Clouse, Jaden Thompson, C.J. Smith. You have a bunch of guys that have some size. I think the speed is better than it was a year ago. As much as I like Rock Taylor, I love Rock Taylor. He wasn't a burner by any stretch of the imagination some massive big play, deep threat downfield. He would win jump balls.
Yeah.
The run after catch wasn't quite there. I think you have some ability in that wide receiver room to sort of burn downfield and take some deep shots. Cortez Braham sort of fits in that regard. But you needed to add. I don't care how late it is in the calendar. You needed to add to that pass catching room. And I think they did a good job getting Cortez Braham.
Does this signal at all that Brendan Lewis is 100% going to be the quarterback? You're bringing in one of his former wide receivers.
You could view it that way if you want. I've never had a doubt though that he's going to be the starter. Ryan can sit there all he wants and say, "Oh, it's an open competition." He can try to keep a semblance of competition in there because that breeds the best in guys, right? Not naming a starter makes them work harder, makes them grind harder, get into the playbook more, watch more film. So, like, I'm okay with that thought process, but I've never had a doubt that Brendan Lewis was going to start anyway. Right. So I don't know how much this means on top of what I already knew. But I hope he gets in soon because they're going to need him. They're going to need him. And I think it's very clear, and this is maybe the more negative way of looking at it, the fact that they're adding a guy this late, like they're already in training camp, it does tell me they have some concerns. Like, we have concerns about the pass catching room and the wide receiver room, all that. They clearly have concerns as well, or they wouldn't have made this move.
The Sacramento Kings have been willing to offer Malik Monk and a first round pick to the Warriors for Jonathan Kuminga per Sam Amick. As for the Kings, which last spoke with the Warriors earlier this week, team sources say they've offered a three-year, $63 million deal for Kuminga in a proposal that would send veteran guard Malik Monk and a 2030 first-round pick, lottery-protected, to the Warriors.
Okay, so the Warriors have offered Jonathan Kuminga a deal, right? 2 years, $45 million is what I've seen, and he denied it. He wants to get closer to $30 million. But I think more than anything, he just wants out at this point of the Warriors organization. They have not used him correctly. This year only played 47 games. Well, they a lot of DNPs for him. Now, I think when he actually played for the Warriors, he didn't necessarily facilitate winning basketball. A lot of shot chucking, volume. But he's a damn good player. In 24.3 minutes per game, he averaged 15.3 points per game. I mean, the guy can fill it up, and the guy is tremendously talented, and he's still very, very, very young. He's 22 years old. I don't get why the Warriors would deny that. And the reason I say that is they clearly don't have Jonathan Kuminga in their long-term plans. They clearly don't value him as a player like the rest of the NBA. So if you're going to get Malik Monk and some first-round picks, some first-round draft capital for it, at least get something in return for a guy that you don't you clearly don't have plans for. I don't understand the Warriors and their operation right now. If you're going to use Jonathan Kuminga, great. If you're going to sign him to a deal, that's great. But based on what we've seen from you and the conversations and reports that have been released since he's been in Golden State, he doesn't have trust in you. You don't have trust in him. So at least get something out of him. I don't understand the Warriors at all in this situation.
I don't either. I'm going to be completely honest with you. It's absolutely insane to turn down this deal for Jonathan Kuminga when he is not part of your future plans. I don't know if you can get better value than Malik Monk, who is one of the better scorers in the NBA. You need a ball handler.
Extra ball handling and shooting, right.
He can help you right now. Malik Monk can plug into your system and make you a better team right now. And Jonathan Kuminga kind of feels like you don't know how he fits into this team right now. When he played last year, I do think that he was effective, but clearly he is not getting along with Steve Kerr, and they don't know what to do with him. It's baffling to me that the Warriors would not accept this offer from the Kings. It sounds like that it's kind of just on the table. Take this deal for Jonathan Kuminga.
If you're going to deny that deal,
play him and keep
Jonathan Kuminga, put him on the floor.
Yeah, or pay him.
Find a damn role for the guy. Because this is annoying at this point. The past 3 years, we've had these same conversations about the Warriors. But I don't think the Warriors have ever put the young development, the development of the young players, they've never put that first and foremost,
I think that
ever.
Pods is like the only guy I can think of that's a young player that has gotten major run on the Warriors.
Yeah. At some point, you're going to have to make a decision on Jonathan Kuminga.
I guess Jordan Poole.
They're just way too in and out with Jonathan Kuminga.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team. Rep your city. Rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, Other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
If you're going to play him and pay him, that's fine with me. But based on what we have seen so far, you're not going to do that. So just why not take Malik Monk
it's
in a first-round
value.
Pick?
It's such
Who
good
cares?
Value.
Who cares? Now, Jonathan Kuminga, how much do you think he should make? Like from a contract valuation standpoint,
about
3 years, 63. Yeah,
I think about that.
About $20 million a year.
Because
there is reports that he wants $30 million per
that's
year.
That's too much.
Yeah,
that's
I agree. He hasn't shown enough.
No.
And now part of that is he plays for the Warriors and Steve Kerr and that front office don't value him the way he should be valued. But considering that he should not be making $30 million a year. But Warriors, make a decision with the guy. Stop holding him hostage. This is ridiculous.
Jonathan Kuminga from Micah Parsons, who says no?
I don't know. Jonathan Kuminga may be a good edge rusher.
He might be.
This guy's a good size.
Yeah.
I mean, he's swole up a little
bit.
Just
jump over the line?
Yeah, just give him 3 months with an edge rushing trainer, and maybe he can make some noise for the Dallas Cowboys. But that will do it for the Blitz. One more segment left in the day. We'll go ahead and rewind when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team. Rep your city. Rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.